WUSB, Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet Radio program as part of Natural Alternatives, every week, Friday at 6 p.m. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that is always, at all times, in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth, and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what the vast majority of us on this planet really do want deep down. Wow, what a week it's been. We've been witnessing an extensive process surrounding what will likely end up with the impeachment of President Trump. And watching a lot of the proceedings, I find it, as I'm sure you do, a little bit disturbing that our lawmakers' perceptions of the truth are entirely, almost 100%, determined by their political affiliation. Truth is supposed to be a place where all sides can come together to reach an agreement. That place is gone. It no longer exists in 2019. And while this process can understandably leave you feeling disdain for the lack of integrity at the highest levels of government, what's even more disturbing is that the lying that we're seeing, and there is lying going on because you can't have two truths held so tightly about the same reality and one of them not bending things a little bit, the lying seems to work. People watching all that's going on don't have the time and energy in their daily lives to stop and research and talk to other people about it and fact check what we and every other person is saying. So we listen and we tend to believe what we hear from those we identify as our team. Okay, that's our team. So we can trust them. So our team repeats something over and over again by the people that we think we can trust. And it ends up having an impact. On social media this week, I had posted the Time Magazine Person of the Year cover with 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg. In response, I got a comment from someone who I've known a long time saying that, quote, she thinks that the world is ending in 12 years. She is mistaken. She needs counseling, end quote. And now at first I thought this person might be making a joke and I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, but then I came to see that he was serious. He actually thought that Greta Thunberg thought that the world was going to end in 12 years. He also thought that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said the same thing and that she believed that the world was going to end in 12 years. Bringing this back home, this belief didn't come out of nowhere, but it came from internet and other sources who he trusted, who put out this kind of information, and who have followers who will take what they say as the truth. Now, they start with an actual statement, and then they proceed to bend and twist that statement into an entirely different reality that gets repeated over and over again to the point that, how could it possibly be not true? I hear it so often. I've seen literature that's been passed on to me that states that liberals want to make flying illegal. They want to take away cars. They want to take away your right to eat burgers. And this is their way of saying, don't let those people in power. Now, part of me finds it amusing. The problem that I see is that many of the people who are hearing this are believing it. And again, they repeat it. Now, the most startling part of the mistruths in this case is that the myths originated with the presidents. And for those of you who are Trump supporters, believe me, if this was a Democratic president, a Humane Party president, or any other president, I would be getting on their case to the same exact degree. The president said, our president said, I really don't like their policy of taking away your car, of taking away your airplane rights, of let's hop a train to California, and of you're not allowed to own cows anymore. He actually said these things. You can fact check it. He said, quote, it would shut down American energy, which I don't think the people in Texas are going to be happy with. It would shut down a little thing called air travel. How do you take a train to Europe? End quote. Now, obviously, those things that he was talking about are not true. They are twisted manifestations of the truth, but they bear no resemblance to the actual truth. So we're in a situation where the president of our country is promulgating these myths, which, if believed, would make anybody pretty concerned. But the fact is, they are not true. Myths, truths about an issue that are so critical and urgent that, according to the very best minds on our planet, needs to be addressed in a comprehensive and global way as soon as possible and have to be recognized as dangerous mistruths. And that, again, is not a political view. And this brings me once again to letting you in on my little secret method of getting a glimpse into a politician's credibility in a world where, again, truth is no longer respected. Now, not every politician who passes my test is credible, so don't misunderstand this. But those who fail are either good at deception or not well able to discern the truth, even when it's obvious. I don't want either of those qualities in my leaders. That secret, you ready? That clear window into the credibility of politicians is their stance on climate change. Now, I'll explain. The reality of climate change is as close to a no-brainer as you get. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody out in the world agrees on it, but what I'm saying is that by looking at the scientists, by the very best experts on this issue, they say that it's a scientific issue that has almost unanimous consensus, both here and abroad. So if you do your homework, if you had all day to research this and all your life, and you could research people and get the best experts to tell you what's true, you would come out the other side believing that climate change was real and something that we needed to address immediately. In addition to that, if you did all that research, you would also find out that we didn't need to sacrifice huge amounts of money or jobs or health to create solutions to this very, very big global problem. Now, for policymakers, many other issues are tough to assess and in the end rely upon a subjective judgment. This includes issues from foreign policy to the economy. I studied economics, and one of my professors read a quote that goes around in the economic circles. And the quote was that if all economists were laid end to end, they would not reach a conclusion. The point is, these issues are complicated, and different experts have different perspectives. Not climate change. For a policymaker, being on the right side of the climate change issue, politics aside, it's a really easy equation. All it takes is tapping into the best information and then being honest about what you find. And our politicians have access to the best information. With that said, in today's world, politics trumps truth. So if a politician does not express the need to take action on climate change, an objectively straightforward issue, I know that one of those two things is at play. Either they're intentionally willing to obscure the truth on an issue that is literally a life and death issue, with the World Health Organization estimating 150,000 deaths annually from climate change this year and every year, and increasing going into the future. Life and death, yes. Outdoor air pollution that accompanies climate change will kill over 4 million people this year and every year. So either they're intentionally misleading or they're not able to grasp a simple scientific truth. Either way, for me, it's the one sign I use to see whether a candidate is fit or not for leadership. I see no other issue that is as straightforward and as easy, as direct in giving us a line into that candidate's soul, if you will. That makes it a very powerful tool. So now, let's spend the rest of our show discussing some bad news and good news, as we pretty much always do. We're going to talk about the sobering truths about climate change. And if you heard Democracy Now!, which preceded this show, you get the picture. But don't worry, there's also some good news coming. And on this show, for the first time in our 13 years, we'll be focusing on the impacts of climate change on Long Island. We'll be discussing the global issues as well, but I'd really like Long Islanders to understand some of what can be expected to happen here under the two scenarios that are out there. One where we as a society do not take sufficient action on climate change. And the other is where we embrace clean energy, energy conservation, energy efficiency, and changing our food choices, where we really grab the bull in order to pet it by the horns. Now, you'll see that the latter scenario can create a whole lot of exciting possibilities and, of course, avoid a whole lot of suffering. And on that note, I'd like to introduce our guest for the rest of this evening's show, who's going to give us a lot of information on the topics we're discussing. And her name is Kate Rogers. She's with the Climate Reality Project. The Climate Reality Project's mission is to catalyze a global solution to the climate crisis by making urgent action a necessity across every level of society. And according to the vast majority of our very best scientific minds, as I've mentioned, that is indeed what is necessary today. Kate did her Climate Reality Project leadership training in Pittsburgh in 2017, subsequently attending the training in Berlin in 2018. She's mentored at the Los Angeles training in 2018 and the Atlanta training in 2019, and she's an organizer of the New York State Climate Reality Leaders Retreat. She's also involved in a lot of associations out east on Long Island as a member of the Town of East Hampton Energy Sustainability, a founding member of the Energize East Hampton Subcommittee, chairperson of the Climate Reality Peconic Region in New York, a co-chair of the Climate Reality New York State Coalition of Chapters, and a founding member of the steering committee for the offshore wind advocacy group, Win with Wind. Thank you for joining us on The Healthy Planet, Kate.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you for your really heartwarming thoughts and important information on how we need to look at our society, ourselves, our leadership moving forward for a sustainable future.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it has to be said, you know, we've got to talk about our techniques for discerning truth in this world where otherwise we're just floating in a sea of whatever comes our way. It's tough. It's a tough situation.
It's a tough situation when you have a trend of a disdain for science, as science is fact-based in its projections and its discoveries. And when you talked about in your introduction, scientific consensus, and we say words, and I just always wonder if everyone has a grasp of what scientific mm-hmm. consensus means. It's not easy to achieve. Science is a competitive profession. A theory comes out. It has to be studied in many studies, in many disciplines, before it's peer-reviewed and published. And then we look at scientists slowly building scientific consensus. So consensus is a tough thing. It's not like somebody says something and all the other scientists in the world jump up and say, yeah. And for the the reality, and that's something we talk about a lot in the Climate Reality Project, the scientists around the world have not only and understand and have agreed that our climate is changing, there are impacts that are happening globally now. They will get more severe, and human activity is the cause. So there's no more debate in the scientific community and in most places about what's causing it, that it's happening, and that we are experiencing the impacts right now and will do so into the future unless we make changes.
Absolutely, and I appreciate your clarification of the word consensus. I had Gavin Schmidt, NASA scientist, one of the lead NASA scientists on climate change, and he described it this way. He said that the evidence that we have on climate change with decades of studies is like a skyscraper. And each brick is a piece of evidence that built that skyscraper. And that often we'll hear the misleading information put out by certain sources that will attempt to cast doubt about one of the bricks in that skyscraper. He says that even if they weren't able to cast doubt on that one brick, there would still be a skyscraper of evidence. That's how compelling it is. And that's how our scientific community looks at what's going on with climate change.
Yes, so there's the scientific community information, and then there's people that have lived in coastal areas, which are the kind of canary in the coal mine, so to speak, right
yep.
now, that have lived there their whole lives, like myself, and have witnessed the changes over time and are experiencing them right now. And Long Island, as an island, we are a frontline community.
That's right.
And
we have to remember we're an island. We forget that because it's so big.
And there's plenty of people out here on the East End where I live now that have been here since the 1938 hurricane and can show you marks that were made on buildings where the worst hurricane ever to hit Long Island came up, the surge, storm surge came up, and now they have marks of where the storm surges have gone much higher. So you have citizen scientists, you have anecdotal knowledge, and then you have the global consensus of scientists.
Right.
So I don't know how much more reality folks need, but I do know that when things strictly get into a political arena, all bets are off in terms of truth. And that's unfortunate in today's world, but it's a fact. A politician's best position, their most comfortable position, is neutral.
Hmm.
Not all of them, but a lot of them, and accepting the status quo. So you hear a lot of terms with good people who, you know, either political party that say, well, we need another study. And you hear that a lot locally because there's still some unanswered questions. There's still some uncertainty. But in the scientific community, and a fabulous book I read by Dr. Henry Pollack, The World Without Ice, he speaks of this idea of uncertainty being a poor excuse for inaction in today's, pardon the word, climate. Because we can't predict world populations down 50 years, 100 years down the line. There are predictors we will have uncertainties because that's the nature of the natural resources business. But that doesn't mean it's no longer a good excuse for inaction.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I'm going to ask you to start before we go into the content about the impacts of climate change on Long Island and the solutions. Talk a little bit about the climate reality project that you're involved with, as well as the group's strategy in creating solutions.
Yes. So the Climate Reality Project is founded and chaired by former Vice President Gore, who's been a voice for decades on this issue, going back into the 80s. And what happens is you can go to a climate reality training. I signed up. I actually saw the sequel. It said on the end, hey, you can go to a training. I said, oh, let me just look. Oh, let me just apply. I don't have a science background, so I was a little hesitant. I don't know if I belong here. I went to the three-day training in Pittsburgh, which was led by Mr. Gore. Dr. Michael Mann was there, leading experts around the world. It was an incredible experience, which gave me the tools to go out and do what we're trained to do, which is to take a presentation. The people have seen it in the films. Mr. Gore's presentation, it's over 400 slides, and we tailor it and make it our own and cut it down to our audience and time constraints, and we go out and give the science facts, the impacts, and solutions to the climate crisis. I'll talk to community groups, everyday folks, folks that you don't normally speak of in the environmental bubble that we live in. I prefer to go out to Rotary clubs and folks that are busy doing regular life, as you said, don't have a lot of time for it, because it's so impactful when you see what's going on globally in one place in a half hour or 45 minutes or an hour. When you put all the pieces together, what's happening on the poles, the floods, the fires, the extreme weather events that are going on globally at the same time that we don't see on the news, it opens people's mind up to the solutions that are at hand. And then being able to say to folks, we have the solutions at hand. Nothing has to be invented. We have what we need to do right now, and that's the transition to renewable energy. And we can do this, and many places are doing this. So that's how we usually end up, showing people that there's countries and companies and states and local municipalities that are making the commitment to 100% renewable. And at this point, I think 30-some-odd trainings, starting with a group of 50, now there's 19,000 of us globally.
Fantastic.
We're all doing the same thing. We're getting the message out on the grassroots level. We also are lobbying as a state group now in the state legislature for climate legislation. And working in every sector across society, like you said, we go to hospitals, we travel to businesses, we have many groups within our organization that are 100% committed businesses, 100% committed hospitals, and we just work on bringing the reality into people's communities.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's great to see that, first of all, you really dove deeply into learning about this. And I believe that if all these people who believe in the climate change deniers, who believe in the news that isn't true, who believe every fact that has no basis, if they too had the chance to be immersed and to get the information like you did, they would too be able to be experts about this because it just makes sense. It's not so complicated when it comes down to it. What's complicated, and the people who are putting out this misinformation know, keeping the people confused with a little bit of doubt can create a whole lot of inaction.
We have to understand that the fossil fuel industry has had a monopoly, you know, for the last 100 years globally. And of course, they don't want to give that up so easily. So a lot of their tactics we know have been modeled after the tobacco industry. A lot of the same playbook it happens with it, the little bit of doubt, the splitting people by political affiliations.
Yeah,
that's you know, the more you divide people. So we don't talk in our presentations about politics per se. We talk about leadership. We talk about what's needed to reduce the impacts, the future impacts that we're facing that we know are coming down the line, and we put what's happening globally now. And our decks are updated 4 times a year. So right now when I go to a community, I'm bringing them information from 2019.
Yeah, you have to update that frequently now. There's
it's hard
so
to
much,
keep up with it at
yeah,
this point.
It's hard to keep up with it. There's just so much, and not small news, there's so much big news coming out. And even just now, we're seeing wildfires in Australia that are historic. Greta Thunberg won the Person of the Year on Time. A new report was just released regarding the melting of the permafrost in the Arctic. The climate change talks are taking place, the UN summit. And probably the biggest story I've heard is that Gidget was arrested at a climate rally.
Right, Gidget.
Gidget, yeah, Sally Fields.
Well, if you love the beach, you got to do something because it's not going to be there forever. I get that. I'm with her.
Yep.
So I have, you know, a lot of people, now you speak to people and hear their personal stories. And my personal story is that my son moved when he was 19 to California, Northern California, because he doesn't like desert weather. He loved it up there. It was a moderate climate, wet in the winter in the North Bay. And in the 10 years that he lived there, and now he's been evacuated this year. He's in New York right now because he just needs a break. He was evacuated for the Kincade Fire again. The rolling power outage is the, as he calls it, beginning of the breakdown of society, which sounds a little dramatic, but when you're thinking about stores closing, power getting shut off, you know, you get to see that where people are going to get a little frantic, mass evacuations. And this has occurred for the last 3 years in a row. And his temperatures are 80s and above. So we're seeing the impacts. And we're seeing the increase in impacts because of the original modeling didn't take into consideration the feedback loops that would be happening. So as the impacts happen, they speed up and they increase the severity of impacts.
Yeah.
So you're seeing more thawing than was predicted. Because now the warm water, not only is the air temperature dropping in the poles and in our glacial places and our Alps. But as the water rises in the ocean, it's also warmer, so it's happening from below as well. So that's why we're seeing this increase in impacts quicker than was anticipated originally.
Right, and as the snow melts, the ground is dark. Dark ground absorbs heat. Snow reflects heat. And that's one of those feedback loops that is really scary.
Really scary. And as the Arctic, something else that wasn't spoken about until recently and understood is that as the permafrost melts at the rate that it's melting now, instead of a carbon sink, it becomes a carbon emitter. So all that carbon over time that has been trapped in this frozen landscape
right.
is now getting put back into our thin shell of an atmosphere.
Yep.
And even the atmosphere itself, you know, we look up from the ground and it looks like it's this vast, endless expanse. But in reality, it's a really thin shell that looks kind of like a Band-Aid around your finger. And we're dumping 110 million tons of greenhouse polluting gases into that atmosphere on a daily basis.
Yep. I've heard it said that if the Earth was the size of a basketball, the atmosphere would be modeled by a bedsheet wrapped around that basketball.
Yeah, it's pretty thin. If anybody can Google and take a look at it from space as we first saw it,
right.
you go, oh, you know, we better take really good care of that. It's kind of like somebody blew a bubble with bubble gum, and there it is around us.
Yeah.
So I just believe that we can do better. I think that before we get to solutions, but it's very interesting to me when you have these new industries and things and you're seeing pushback. We could talk about that later, but we're seeing the necessity of the change to renewable energy and cleaning up our act, so to speak.
Oh, we are.
Happening globally. We're looking, if you don't even want to talk globally with the triple-digit temperatures, creating uninhabitable places on the Earth right now.
Yeah. Yep, and talk a little bit about that. That is something that's happening. Places on Earth are becoming uninhabitable for human life.
Particularly in the summertime, we're seeing it particularly, it's becoming more and more of a struggle in parts of India, in Pakistan, the Middle East, and it doesn't look so great in Australia right now. You're watching impacts like when you start to hit triple digits, you're starting to see birds fall from the sky and die.
Mm. And Australia has these heat waves, they have these fires, these historic fires, as I mentioned, and they are obstructing forward movement at the climate change talks.
Coal is a big part of their economy. They export a lot of coal, not for necessarily heat purposes, but for industrial use. And yes, you have people protecting a certain number of industries over human life, and that is very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's a folly, and one of the things that bothers me the most about people supporting that is you're kind of arguing against your own self and the future for your family.
Yeah, it's true. You say Australia has a big coal industry, and so that's what's important. But if climate change happens in the way that could happen, if we do nothing about it or take insufficient action, then selling coal is going to be the last of their worries.
Well, right now they're facing some pretty severe impacts with the fires and the heat waves that they're having.
Right.
And I don't know what their politicians say. Do they think that, you know, oh, magically next year this is going to stop? And we all wish that would happen. That would be wonderful. But it's not reality. The reality is right now CO2 is being released into the atmosphere faster than any time in at least the last 66 million years.
Yeah.
And we've got to stop it. The hottest years on record have all been since 2001, with the last 5 years being the hottest.
Yep.
Going up to 2018, we haven't, and 2019 doesn't look like a downtrend at this point.
No.
So we don't expect any difference. We're seeing as 93% of the heat gets absorbed by our oceans, we're watching the warming of the oceans, which leads to many things. One is the increase in the intensity of hurricanes.
Right.
Hurricanes are greatly impacted by the warming of the oceans, and right now we're seeing it at a depth, the heating going down to a depth in the ocean that we've never seen before. So we know for globally and for Long Island in particular that warmer oceans lead to more intense hurricanes. They intensify much more rapidly. Warmer air holds much more moisture, leading to the heavier downpours that we see. And, of course, the storm surges increase due to sea level rise. And that jet stream, when we heard in the news that the polar vortex split in two again in January of this year, our jet stream, we can see it, has become much wavier. And that holds the storms in place longer.
Right. So let's stay with the storms just for a moment. People will recall Hurricane Sandy.
Yes.
And the predictions have always been that that kind of storm was coming and that that kind of storm will worsen as time goes on. So Long Island, we are a coastal community, the north and the south, and we are going to suffer from these more extreme storms that have been predicted and that are in fact happening. And then you moved on to the polar vortex. Yeah. Have you? No one's ever heard of a polar vortex before. And yet,
yeah, the fact
here
that
they are. So explain it.
Yeah, so the polar vortex is a circulation of air around the poles. And so we have this tight circulation. We've all heard all growing up about our jet stream. And that jet stream has been pretty steady. But is warmer air in its path around the planet. And that's how we had the seasons that we used to have, the predictable seasons, the mild climate that we've experienced in our lifetimes. But now when that polar vortex splits in two, what happens is as the warm air from the equators is brought up to the poles, it's melting the poles. And that freezing air that was at the poles is getting pushed down, creating the extreme weather that we see, the sub-zero temperatures that we saw across the country last year and are seeing again this year. It's extremes. So the incidence of extreme weather events has increased tenfold in the last decade. So as the climate impacts continue, these increases are doubling and tripling. If we could talk about Sandy, there was a time when Sandy happened. It was a once-in-a-100-year storm.
Yep.
Now they look at Sandy as a once-in-a-25-year storm. 10 years from now, the prediction is Sandy will be once-in-a-5-year storm. So we see more incidents of this, and Sandy was a terrible, terrible storm, and many people lost their homes and some their lives and were greatly impacted. In September, we just had Hurricane Dorian. That was a Category 5. They're looking to create a new category now for storms because they don't think 5 is the top number anymore.
Right, and it destroyed the Bahamas.
Total devastation. We're seeing it in typhoons, in other parts of the world. We're looking at 160-mile-an-hour to 200-mile-an-hour winds. There's nothing that can stand against that.
Yep.
And so I hear this, and living on Long Island and loving my community and loving Long Island and the waterways I grew up on, it just it propels me to action. And I hope when people see that and they think of our vulnerability here on Long Island, it propels them to action too.
Absolutely. So let's talk about Long Island, again, being an island surrounded by water. Talk a bit about global sea level rise and the impact on Long Island.
Well, as we're seeing the melt-off that we're talking about happen faster in the ocean, we're seeing higher sea level rises happening globally. There's countries around the world that are starting to buy real estate inland to retreat to. Kiribati in Africa is one of those places. We're looking at the Maldives, who are 1 meter above sea level rise, being greatly impacted. But here on Long Island, we're also looking at impacts that we haven't seen before. And we're looking at sea level rise I think it was a Newsday a couple weeks ago, down just west of the Shinnecock and Allenhampton Bays, across from the commercial fishing docks. They're losing that road to sea level rise. They've downed it with bulldozers. They're constantly trying to push the ocean back, build up dunes to at least save the structures that are there, but it's a losing battle at this point. And the incidence of that happening is more and more and more. And it's not just during storms or nor'easters. It's sunny day high tides that we're experiencing all over Long Island. So it's not storm weather. It's a beautiful sunny day, yet streets are flooding. And that, when you see that happening, that's an indicator of sea level rise and the impact that it's having here. So we have a downtown Montauk project where they put in geotextile bags to save the economic engine of my town, which is the hotels and businesses down in Montauk. And they know that this is a temporary solution.
Of course.
They have to put sand back on it constantly until they do a long-term planning, and they're doing a study right now and looking at retreat here as well. They're raising roads out here in East Hampton. Some of our fisheries are collapsing. The fish are migrating. Due to the warming water temperatures and the acidification, we're seeing, people have seen in Newsday and other papers on Long Island, and for their own selves, the red tides, the algae blooms. This is all consistent with the impacts of climate change as our planet warms.
And just so people understand, the acidification of the ocean takes place. One of the reasons is when we put carbon into the air, the ocean absorbs it, and that turns it from being more base to being more acid. And fish and everything that lives in the ocean requires a particular atmosphere, whether it's the temperature or the acidity level, and that is all changing.
So calcification prevents the shells from being created by shellfish. Right now out here, we had a horrendous Peconic Bay scallop season. They're gone. And not only is it an industry out here, but also for local folks. Now, you know, you say East Hampton, people think the Hamptons. But actually, we're a year-round community out here of about 20,000 people. A lot of people are below the poverty line out here, the poverty line of Suffolk County. Hmm. And fishing and shellfish are a way to feed themselves. So when you lose a fishery out here, it has not only the industrial impact, but also the social impact and the impact to local folks as well. Hmm. And we're seeing that happen. And then, you know, you're looking at people getting distressed and having to leave because they can't support themselves here anymore. That's happening to a level in East Hampton. There's other factors involved as well, just like everywhere else. But we've also seen that happen globally. And a lot of the immigration, and I'm doing air quotes that you can't see, crises around the world, don't ever mention the impact that droughts are having.
Absolutely. We've discussed that on this program.
So when you saw in Syria, when the droughts in Syria in the early 2000s pushed 1.5 million people into the cities, that destabilizes governments. When we hear this horrible situation that's happening on our border and treating people like criminals, when in Honduras and Guatemala, there's a dry corridor that's happening. People can no longer grow food. They no longer have access to water. So they're leaving. So this is going to continue to happen as places become inhabitable. And people are going to start moving to the places that are still habitable.
And our very own Customs Border Protection gave the Trump administration a report on that more than a year ago, telling them that these were climate refugees who were coming up because they were starving. The response from the Trump administration was to cut aid for farmers in those areas that were suffering from droughts and climate change.
One thing that you can say about whatever your political affiliation is, we are not floating above the earth, America. We're part of this biosphere. We're part of this planet. And responses like that are only going to make the situation worse. It's not leadership. It's not what we're here for. We need to implement the solutions. If you want to say, oh, we have to strengthen our borders, then I don't know how it doesn't go hand in hand to say we have to get off carbon to protect our future. It's very cherry-picking, and it's not leadership.
Yeah.
And right now, we're at crossroads in many ways, and we need strong leadership on every level.
Absolutely. And on Long Island, there are other implications from climate change and pollution, and that is the impact on our health.
Yes. Just before I move to the health impacts, I just want to acknowledge what's happening out here. Businesses like the Shelter Island Ferry, they're raising all their docks. They've acknowledged that something is going on, and they need to respond to it.
Hmm.
And they believe that it's, you know, sea level rise is happening. They see it happening. Montauk Commercial Docks are being raised because they're also having difficulties. This is how you see everyday people who aren't known to, you know, live in political ideologies, but have to face the everyday realities of what's happening, make changes.
Yeah.
So there are places on Long Island, across Long Island, that are making changes to deal with what they see happening right now.
Yeah.
So we're not exempt.
That's important. Yeah. No, we're not. No, again.
And we're not exempt from the global health crises that are going on. The impacts are across the board. You can't separate any sector of our lives from the impacts of climate change. It doesn't work like that. We're connected to every ecosystem, and as the ecosystems change and collapse, and the world of these systems changes in itself, in which the systems are created, in which they function, you're going to feel the impacts. So from waterborne infectious diseases to air pollution to insect diseases, it's all on the rise, and the ranges of these diseases are widening across the globe. They're moving northward from the equator as the temperature rises. So we see it with Zika, we see it with ticks, we see it with mosquitoes, we see it with dysentery. As the flooding happens and the waterborne diseases get spread, we're seeing outbreaks of cholera, hepatitis A, typhoid fever, E. coli, and others. We're seeing people impacted by air pollution from the burning of fossil fuels. There's cities in China where you can't go outside with your mask on. You can't see the sun in daylight. Hmm. India has that problem, and we have it here too. When I went to the Atlanta training, my eyes were really open to poor communities that are impacted by the burning of fossil fuels, by the dumping of coal ash into their water, by these compressor stations that you need for natural gas pipelines that sound like jet engines and emit diesel 24 hours a day. And they put them, there's no zoning, they put them right next to houses because you need to compress that gas as it travels hundreds of miles. It loses the push behind it, so you need to compress it every so many miles, every 50, 100 miles. The compressor stations get put in the middle of these people's towns and communities.
Hmm.
So we have people here in this country, as we burn fossil fuel plants and they're far away, we're not impacted by them, who are suffering from what we're doing every day.
Yeah, indeed. On that note, unless you want to add something else to that, I'm going to move on to solutions.
The only thing I want to say that really impacts Long Island, and we all have to talk about on Long Island, is ticks. So we see that the number of U.S. tick-borne diseases more than doubled from 2004 to 2016, and mosquito-borne infections increased nearly 10 times, and that's here in the United States. So we're, again, there's not a group of us, no matter what your political affiliation, no matter what your belief system is, that aren't impacted by the climate crisis.
No, absolutely not. And it's something that tick disease really doesn't get the play that it deserves, because when you get Lyme disease, if it goes untreated, it can really cause very serious lifelong impacts that change your quality of life. It's very serious. It's not just like you take an antibiotic and you're done. That can happen if you catch it. But in some cases, that's not the case.
No, if it's undiagnosed, if it's not treated properly, it is life-threatening.
Yeah. And then
shut down. It's an insidious disease, Lyme disease.
It is. It's really tough. And so many ticks around. It has changed the way, I see it, the way people I know interact with nature. Just because of that threat that lurks in the tall grasses.
It's changed my way, all of us out here. I mean, we're highly impacted out here, as most people are in Suffolk County. I know so many people. I mean, we don't go in the woods. We stay, pretty much try to stay on the beach or in the water. But we see ticks in the winter now out here. Our winters are so mild here on Long Island that the ticks are proliferating. They love wet winters that stay in this moderate temperature and don't really... We need a hard freeze to get rid of these guys. And it's not just ticks. It's mice. It's voles. We're seeing a proliferation of disease-carrying pests across the board because we just don't have the winters to impact them at all.
Yeah, and it's changing.
Yeah, it's changing. So, yes, solutions... That's the good news.
Yeah, that is the good news. And let's start with, well, we could start with solar. I'm in the process of getting my second set of solar panels on my home. And for those of you who don't have them, it is a win-win, no-brainer solution. And of course, for us, we have a geothermal system as well. It's even more beneficial because it runs our heating and cooling as well. So let's talk about solar.
Yeah, well, solar, the amount of solar wind PV installations is the predictions 20 years ago were that the solar energy market would grow 1 gigawatt per year by 2010. And the reality, the wonderful reality, that was in 2002.
Yeah.
And the reality that we've exceeded that prediction by 109 times.
That's amazing.
And it's wonderful. And not only are we seeing home installation of solar, we're starting to see industrial solar farms.
Right.
I have one that just went in down my street that's producing 800 kilowatts that's going into the grid. It's 1,500 panels. The neighborhood was thrilled to get it. And we see that happening on the county level. And we see businesses with large roofs starting to take a look at solar. It saves you money.
It just saves you money.
And that's your number one. That's great for everyone. And then you're also reducing our carbon output into the air. And we need to do that as much as we can. So solar's magnificent. And our solar capacity is only growing. And in 1 hour, we actually have enough solar to power the Earth for 1 year.
Hmm.
But we're seeing purchase agreements drop. The price of solar is dropping drastically. For example, just take Minnesota. It's declined 34% in the last 4 years, the cost. So as we see that cost take a dive and the technology improve, we're seeing solar happening everywhere. As a matter of fact, a very good sign is the Coal History Museum in Kentucky has just installed solar on their roof.
Well, that's good. That's a good sign.
A good sign.
I think so. And the other thing about solar on Long Island is consider this. When you're using electricity in your home, you are using that electricity that comes from a power plant that is belching out the gases, that is getting that fuel from another state and not really adding that much to the Long Island economy. When you get solar panels, you're getting solar panels that are being installed by humans who live on Long Island, who are working for solar companies, and by purchasing it yourself, you're telling others about it, they're getting them, the industry takes off, and the solar industry on Long Island is now rather large and putting a lot of people to work. And that is also the case across the country.
Yes, we're seeing a lot of investment going into solar and renewable energy, and solar plus battery storage is a game changer.
Yep.
So once this battery storage technology, which now in the past, just the past couple of years since when I trained in 2017, it was an idea. And now we have them in East Hampton. We're installing them in substations around town. So when you combine solar and you combine the battery storage, that's the answer.
That's the answer.
That's the answer right there. And the same thing for Long Island's capacity for offshore wind.
Yeah, I think wind is one of the most exciting aspects of clean energy. I've been involved with promoting winds through Healthy Planet for many, many years. In fact, when the first wind turbine plant was defeated, I was the guy on News 12 who had to give some words as to what I thought was coming. And in fact, I said, you know, this plant went down, but it's on its way. And a decade later or so, here it is. So talk about wind.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Texas in your introduction.
Yep.
And just so folks know, wind power generated more electricity than coal in Texas for the first half of 2019. In fact, it generated so much that at night they're giving it away free.
Wow.
In western Texas, they have great onshore wind. Right now in America, there are over 56,000 operating onshore wind turbines across the country.
Hmm.
So we here on Long Island, we don't have an onshore wind resource, nor do we really have the roadways to get those turbines down the road. But we do have 35 miles offshore, 40 miles offshore of the coast of Long Island. We have a world-class wind resource that we are beginning to tap into. And with the passing of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, we've set goals now for renewable energy generation. In New York State, pretty aggressive goals in comparison to states across the country. So I'm pretty excited about that. What we need everyone to do is keep reminding those in power that it's not just okay to pass it. You have to now do it.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at right now. We're thrilled at the passage and setting these renewable energy goals for New York State. That will make us a leader in the country. But yep. We also have to keep up and kind of keep reminding everyone it's not enough to just pass it. Everyone's patting themselves on the back, and that's great, and it was momentous, but now it's the next day, and let's get our boots on and go to work.
Right, and it's not that everyone is on board yet. I know that there was a lot of opposition back many years ago from the people who lived at the beaches and didn't want to see those turbines miles and miles off ashore. It was actually at that point, it was 3.5 miles. Now they're much further away. But there's still opposition, and some of that opposition is in East Hampton. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, we are facing opposition. We here in East Hampton, we have the situation, and some communities have the opposite situation, and there's opposition there as well. But in East Hampton, we have climate smart leadership in our town board and our governing bodies here in East Hampton. In fact, we just had an election where the anti-wind slate, wind power slate, ran against the candidates who supported the incumbents, and the election results, I think, tell the better than any poll. Our guys, or the guys that I support who are climate savvy, won by 72%. So we have that. But we also have East Hampton's unique for the different communities that are here. And we have some folks that live here who, some are home here, where the cable landing will come in. The cable will go 30 feet under a beach with horizontal directional drilling, and then go under a street directly 4 miles up to the nearest substation. And they're very well funded. They're billionaires, and they don't want that to happen on their street. So they've amassed a war chest of $1 million, and they are fighting this tooth and nail with a lot of misinformation campaigns. They just started one on Facebook again. They're going after Orsted, the developer of the wind farm. It's xenophobia. It's a foreign company, even though they work for global companies themselves, which is the height of hypocrisy. Some of them work for McKinsey and Blackstone, and they do not want their street dug up temporarily to lay a 24-inch cable underground that will take the power from the wind farm up to the substation. There's a lot of fear about EMFs, a fear about turning small hamlet of summer homes, summer people with very large summer homes, industrializing it is the fear. There's also a tradition of fishing out here that's been here forever. Fishing families out here are part of our originating tradition, and their fishing grounds, they're worried about sharing the ocean with the wind turbines, and I get that. And I appreciate that, and I think they should have a seat at the table, and the developer should work with folks, and they are as much as they can. What I don't appreciate is when you're using the tobacco industry misinformation tactics and scare tactics.
Yeah, it is scary. They make it look like it's the evil empire coming in to put in wind turbines.
Right now they have a new campaign that this group of 4 or 5 houses didn't really get anywhere here in East Hampton. As you can see, there's tremendous community support. Now they're going to attack every one of the wind projects across Long Island until they get the cable moved.
Wow.
So they've started this campaign saying your electric rates are going to go crazy. You don't deserve this. This foreign company's coming in. They're a horrible company. And when you sit there and you talk about misinformation in your introduction, and you just say, how do you just look at a Facebook ad and accept this?
Yeah. I read someone who made a comment at one of the hearings about this plant, and he said, I don't know who he is, but he says, we're standing at the rail of a sinking ship in our tuxedos, looking at the lifeboat and saying, does it have a bathroom? Does it have an outboard motor? Can I take my suitcase? It's time to stop dithering and build this thing.
Yes.
And on that note, we are coming to a close. Kate, I'm going to give your contact information. Any final thoughts about this whole topic?
I think ultimately, no matter who's in the White House, no matter who's anywhere, the change and forcing the politicians and the leaders to change has to come from us. We have to speak loudly and clearly and let our elected leaders know that we won't tolerate the status quo any longer.
We can't.
No, we can't.
Absolutely. Well, Kate Rogers, thank you so much for being with us. That's Kate Rogers with the Climate Reality Project. You can go to www.climaterealityproject.org. That's climaterealityproject.org. And I'll close making a statement about the fact that Long Island is in a unique position to be a world leader. We have a couple of things going for us. One, we do not mine coal or natural gas or oil or have a big fossil fuel industry here. Two, we stand to suffer greatly from the impacts of climate change. And we are already suffering greatly from health impacts and other things that have been discussed on this program. And when you put these two together, and you put together also an aware and motivated public, which we do have. We've got a lot of people doing excellent education on this, and we have for many decades. There's a perfect combination for us to put it all together and create an island which is a model for the rest of the world. So it's not just going to benefit Long Islanders. It's going to create a model for the world to create their own clean energy, healthy oasis that we so desperately need today. There's no time to wait. And I look forward to this process that's happening now. There is a lot of noise and a lot of stuff in the way, but once we get past all that, and I believe that we will, I know that we're headed to a very hopeful place. So on that note, my name is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio program. I'm going to be back on Friday, January 3rd at 6 p.m., it's also a Friday. Between now and then, you'll also hear the wonderful Dr. Eugene Zamperone and Beth Fiteni, who will give you cutting-edge information on all kinds of other health and environmental topics. And that's it for tonight. Until then, stay strong, eat well, speak your voice when it comes to speaking about clean energy and the need to do something immediately about climate change. Be kind to those around you and enjoy this beautiful, beautiful world that we all share. Good night.
Out where the river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak.